We've heard a lot about different aspects of net neutrality from an international perspective, and that is exactly how we're going to continue. Because after years of dispute, the next month the European Parliament is going to have to vote on the issue of net neutrality in Europe. And we're very happy that Tom Leuninger is here to give us an overview of what is going to most likely happen within that context next week. Tom is a digital rights activist, and when I get to introduce him on stage, I usually say he's Mr. Net Neutrality in Europe, and there's hardly anybody who's more qualified to talk about this topic than he is. He's based in Vienna, but has worked on this topic at a European level, and has also, during the course of the last year, taken time and trouble to look at it from a very international perspective. He's worked with Save the Internet campaign, as well as the Open Knowledge Foundation in Austria, and we're proud to say also with Digitale Gesellschaft e.V. And so please give a very warm applause for Tom, who's come here all the way from Vienna to speak with us today. Thank you.
Thank you, Geraldine. Thank you, Geraldine. Am I up? Yes. Good. Schrödinger's net neutrality is the title of this talk, and I'm going to give a brief overview about the global situation on net neutrality. Really just want to add to the previous talk, because I also think we need more data when it comes to the effects of zero rating in the global south. This is increasingly becoming an important subject. In this map from the Global Coalition on Net Neutrality, you can see on the left side with the blue countries, those are the ones that already have protections for net neutrality. To the right, you have the yellow countries, which are without net neutrality, and the red ones, which are currently considering legislation. One important aspect of this talk is that it's not just about adopting legislation on net neutrality. You really have to understand it as a two-step process, because it doesn't help if you have a law if it's not executed and if it's not really applied to the practices of telecom companies in the various countries. There are four good countries which already use the law to prevent net neutrality violations from happening: Canada, Chile, the Netherlands, and Slovenia, for example. In the US, we'll have to see how the new FCC rules will hold up in court and how they're actually applied by the regulator. And particularly in Latin America, we are at the stage where there have been good laws that have been adopted, but now they also have to be implemented. And exactly in this implementation process, a lot can go wrong, because it's the regulatory authorities in every country that actually have to apply the law and give it concrete meaning. And particularly in Mexico and Brazil, those regulators are looking right now at Europe, and they are waiting what we will do, which regulation the European Union will adopt, before they actually transpose these laws and apply them to the market. The biggest part of this talk will be about the Telecom Single Market Regulation. This is a law which is considered right now in Europe in its final stages, and that would create binding legislation about net neutrality in all of Europe. And I'm going to try something quite challenging here. I'm trying to teach you a little bit about the way Europe creates its laws, so how the legislative process in Europe actually works. You have this basic outline of the three European institutions. You have the Commission on top, the Parliament to the left, and the Council of the 28 Member States to the right. The Commission is the only one who can actually propose legislation, and the Commission did so with this law in September 2013 under Commissioner Lini Cruz. And then in April 2014, this actually really bad legislation was repaired, because the European Parliament, right before the elections in May 2014, made all the necessary repairs so that we can speak of real net neutrality in this law. But then in March 2015, after a long time, the Council adopted its position, which was actually quite shitty. It was again reintroducing many of the problems that we had in the Council. And so now all three institutions made their point, got their position, and they had now to agree on a common position in the so-called trialogue. And this trialogue agreement was just reached before the summer break in July, and again is quite bad, which you can also see here. This is a comparison table which compares the four laws that we are talking about, the four proposed texts, with various aspects of net neutrality through which we're going to go through now. First of all is zero rating, or the practice of economical discrimination or price discrimination. This basically refers to excluding certain data traffic out of your monthly cap. So you have your 400 megabytes per month, but you could use as much Facebook as you want or as much Spotify as you want. And here only the parliament adopted good rules. Specialized services. This is the one topic which has been central to the European debate. It's worth noting that no other net neutrality law in the world actually defines specialized services. We are the only ones that try to achieve that, and it's quite a hard task to do this future-proof and technologically neutral. And here we all again see that the Parliament is the only one who made a good job at it to find a strict definition of specialized services. All the others are too wide, so they would allow existing online services to just buy a fast lane under the category of specialized services. The trilogue agreement is really fuzzy at this point. So here, the regulators would have to give it actual meaning. We don't know what the text actually say. The text is so vague that it could just be interpreted in a good or in a bad way. Blocking competitors. Again, a very central aspect of net neutrality, and here we look quite good. So except to the original commission proposal, none of these texts would allow that you, for example, could not use Skype on your mobile phone. That through the terms of services, you're just prohibited by your ISP to use certain services. There, even the Council and the Trilogue Agreement, as well as the Parliament, give it a good go. Privatized enforcement refers to something which is not really net neutrality, but is also, which is also central for digital rights. It would allow ISPs to block stuff based not on laws. So it is okay if you get a court order as an ISP or if there is a specific law that you have to block certain content because it's illegal. But if you are ordered to do so just by some public authority, by the police or by anyone really, then we have a big problem because then we are also in breach with the Charter of Fundamental Rights, which states that every restriction on fundamental rights has to be based by law. In the Council, the UK succeeded with introducing a new part of this law, which is the blocking of porn website, child protection. And in this case, it's again not only a parental control filter, which is installed on the end user's computer, it is a default on mandatory youth protection filter, which is always on. In the UK, it's the case that you have to go to the shop of your ISP physically in order to remove this youth protection barrier. They wanted to introduce a similar thing in their council agreement, but then in the trilogue, we could get rid of it. But it's likely to come back. And then there is a new problem, which was just introduced in the trilogue agreement, so in the final stages of the negotiation. And that's the so-called class-based traffic management. And what this means is basically the end of the best effort internet. This would allow ISPs to sort every data package into one of various categories. So every data package would have a priority category. You would have a totally class-based system. So instead of all data being treated equally, every data would have its category. And so, for example, voice over IP or television would be always prioritized. Your normal web browsing would be in the average category. But if you want to use file sharing or encrypted connections, those would be throttled in the least effective category, in the slowest category. This is already the case in the UK and also with some Belgian ISPs. And this is a real problem which we have to get rid of. So that's the text as we have it right now. If you look through it, it is quite clear that there are still many things we have to work for. So accepting the text as it is not a good option. And this trilogue agreement, which has been reached just before the summer break, now has to go through the Parliament again. And the European Parliament has 5 weeks. Yeah, the European Parliament has 5 weeks left, or a little bit more, it depends. The earliest date for the vote in plenary could be the first week of October, but because of procedural changes, it could be that we see the vote a little bit later. And the Parliament basically now has 3 options. It could either accept the text as it is, It could reject it, or it could amend it. What does this three options mean? If they just accept the text as it is, then it's adopted. It's basically a really fast process. People who are for roaming, which is another aspect of this dossier, would prefer this option, to just accept the text as it is and make it become a law really fast. The other option, if the parliament would reject the trilogue agreement, this would basically mean the end of this law. And the third option, which we are fighting for, is to amend it. So this would mean that we would have to get amendments through in plenary, and then it would go back to the council, which again could accept these changes, which would make the law really fast and go into effect. Or they could reject those changes, which would be the end of the whole legislative process. Or they could decide to keep on negotiating. And then we enter into a second phase of trilogue. So again, all three institutions have to come together and have to agree on whatever position Parliament and the Council adopted. Again here, if this process takes longer than 6 weeks, the whole thing dies. If they actually reach an agreement within these 6 weeks, then it goes back to Parliament. And Parliament then again has the option to either reject it or accept it. There is no space for amendments. In the third reading, it's a binary vote with a simple majority to either accept or reject the whole package. That's not it. As I discussed earlier, once we have this law passed in the parliament, and it actually goes into effect in all 28 member states countries, the body of European regulators, so like the body of all 28 regulatory agencies in the EU, has to come together, and within 9 months, has to create guidelines which give this text a concrete meaning. So all the fuzziness that I talked about earlier, particularly in the case of specialized services, will be extinct at this point. So this is the concrete interpretation of the law which is binding for all regulators. They have to do a basically ask the public, consult with the public, and they also have to take into account whatever the commission is saying. So these BEREC guidelines are, for us as civil society, definitely a step to think about. And as civil society, we have three options now. We either could delete the whole thing. We could say the current text is so fucked up, it's so unrealistic that we could get changes through, that we just delete net neutrality, let roaming pass, and aim for national legislation. This may sound good from a German or Austrian or Dutch or Slovenian perspective, but for most countries this would mean no net neutrality protection for a decade to come. Because many countries wouldn't consider national legislation, and the European Commission made clear that under Commissioner Oettinger, under no circumstances they would propose another legislation on net neutrality if this one fails. The second option we have is just to accept the text as it is and focus on the consultation of the BEREC guidelines. This means that we have to deal with all the fuzziness and we just have to postpone the problem for the BEREC creation. And there are a few issues, for example, zero rating, where the outcome is quite predictable and bad for us. So the third option is to amend the text, so to try to get amendments through in the second reading in plenary and just keep fighting. How to do that? First, we have to get past this guy. Martin Schulz, the president of the European Parliament, has to accept all amendments that can be voted upon in second reading. So he has to give a sign of approval for every change that we want to make to the text. We actually have quite good cards at this case because we had an election between the first and second reading, and that's one good reason to propose amendments. The second big barrier we have, a simple majority will not do. We need an absolute majority in order to pass amendments in second reading, which means not only half of all the votes cast at the vote, it means half of all the MEPs, not only those who are present, so half of all over 750 MEPs that are currently in the European Parliament. This is a higher barrier, but still it's doable, but it would need a big push from civil society and also a lot of public attention in order to pressure MEPs to really vote for good amendments. If we could get these amendments through, then we are at this process. I'm now trying to explain what will happen in the second phase of the trilogue agreement. To the left, we have discrimination of networks, so like violations of net neutrality, and to the right, we have protection of net neutrality. And the original commission text is actually quite bad, as I've explained. The text of the parliament is quite good. The text of the council of the 28 member states, again, is quite shitty. And the trilogue agreement is somewhere around here. Now, a funny thing happened. This original council agreement was just a political one. The official first reading position of the council is the trilogue agreement. And so, if the parliament now adopts a second reading position, the space for negotiations is actually between those two. So we could not fall behind what has been agreed upon already. We could only get better. And then the decision is clear. We have to keep on fighting. We have to make this choice really try to improve the text and fix those loopholes who are still in there. We have to give this fuzzy text a concrete meaning. We have to especially look at zero rating and economic discrimination. How can we actually do that? There are three things that at least I would propose. One is symbols. We have seen in the US and also in the Indian safety internet campaigns that symbols are really important. In order to get the public on board, you have to explain what net neutrality actually means. And this only works if you make it an issue of fundamental rights, of innovation, of freedom of choice, of freedom of speech, of all those things that make the internet this diverse and great place that it is. Second thing, we have to contact comedians. We have to wrap our message in funny things that people actually hear. There's this quote attributed to Charlie Chaplin: if you want to tell them the truth, you better be funny, otherwise they'll kill you. They might not kill us, but they might not listen to us. So this is also important, and this is also the reason why in India it worked so well, because there again it was not John Oliver, but it was another group of comedians that explained the issue so well and so funny that over 1 million people in India contacted RNA and got active for net neutrality. And the third thing, which goes to everyone listening to me right now or later, is pick up the damn phone. SaveTheInternet.eu gives you the opportunity to directly get in contact with your members in the European Parliament, with your representatives. You have to make your voice heard in order that we can win this fight. We offer various ranges of tools how to do that. The fax has been most prominent in the past, but we have been so successful that during the summer break, the European Parliament switched from a paper-based fax system to an electronic one. So sadly, there is no longer a physical token of what the one citizen thinks in the office of the MEP. Now it's all in the outlook of the assistants. We are currently overhauling the Save the Internet campaign. It should be ready in a few weeks or in a few days, depending on the volunteers and our work. But yeah, that's where we stand right now. And thanks for the attention.
Thank you very much, Tom. And as with the other speakers, you're going to definitely be around with us for the rest of the day, right? Okay, great. Because we